This program does not create an attorney-client relationship between Moss and Barnett, a professional association, or any attorney appearing on this program and any caller or listener. Please remember that we can only give general information, and every case is unique. Always check with your individual attorney for any specific legal concerns. If you are in need of specific legal advice or are looking for an attorney, please do not hesitate to give Moss and Barnett a call at 612-877-5000.
This is WCCO's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
We'll certainly keep an eye on the weather. So far, so good. A warm, humid day in the Twin Cities. We've got a great show lined up today. Our host, as always, Tom Schroyer, joins us in studio today. Hi, Tom.
Good to be here, Steve. And welcoming all as well, Ed Weiner, senior member and co-chair of Moss and Burnett Family Law Group, joined from Boston by Jerry Nissenbaum today, another family law attorney who, Ed, you've known for a number of years now.
I have. Far too many years, I think, Tom.
Well, you're dating yourself. That's good.
No, I think it's just the relationship makes it feel like twice as long as it's actually been. I hope he can't hear us.
And greetings to you, Jerry Nissenbaum.
Hi.
Say, for our listeners, Steve, let me introduce both Jerry and Ed by stating that they are distinguished family law practitioners. Each has been nationally ranked by national media, in Jerry's case by Town & Country magazine, and for Ed by Worth magazine. And both are diplomats of the American College of Trial Lawyers, which is a top-notch group of family law attorneys. It's limited to just 100 attorneys in the whole country, as a matter of fact. So congratulations, Jerry and Ed, on that accolade.
Thank you.
I also would note, Steve, Jerry's an author. He does a weekly column, in fact, for the newspaper, The Boston Herald. And so we're going to be talking today about high-stakes divorce, a topic that is always of currency, it seems, in the media these days. We have a number of divorces going on right now, Ed, including a rocky situation with the leading actor, Mel Gibson.
Well, I don't know. Has that been reduced to a divorce case at this point or not? I'm not certain. You know, what you hear in the media, it might not actually be accurate, but clearly, if there isn't a divorce that's been served at this point, it seems inevitable it will be served because it's a horrible situation.
Sure. And, of course, our focus is on the dissolution of marriages. And we want to stress for our listeners that we are not, of course, anti-marriage. We are, in fact, very pro-marriage. Ed, I know you're very happily married. Your wife, Michelle, is with us today in the studio. And Jerry is also...
Hi, Michelle.
She can't hear you, Jerry, or she can hear you, but she can't respond.
And Michelle and Ed have been very long-term friends with myself and my wife, Madeline. We've been married 29 years.
Exactly. I know that you both have very joyful and long-term marriages. And, in fact, at a number of occasions you have told me you've talked folks into hanging in there and renewing their marriage.
I think Jerry will agree to that, and he's had the same experience in his book, Sex, Love, and Money. I think he refers to that. We have actually saved a number of marriages through the years, Tom. Divorce lawyers don't sell divorces. It's like morticians. I mean, we perform a service for the clients. We try to help them get their lives together. And if people come in and we don't think they really, really should jump into a divorce, most of us will try to talk them out of it.
Sure. And I know that is not only heartfelt, but also a practice that you make routine. And let me say to our listeners and to Steve that I've known Ed now for close to 30 years, practiced with him. He's a brilliant attorney. And I can tell from my time spent with Jerry Nissenbaum that he is as well. And so I'm going to ask both of you, having such obvious talent and being so successful as you are, why did you choose to go into family law?
Jerry, I can't answer that, Jerry, but I want to hear what you have to say.
Well, I started practicing law in a small firm as a new associate. So I got to do the things that nobody else wanted to do. And that was 1967, so more than 43 years ago. Back then, divorce was lower on the totem pole than collection law. It was lower on the totem pole than representing the slum landlords that the firm had as clients. And I got to do all three, and also, you know, the smallest kinds of criminal cases. And unfortunately, perhaps because of my sick mental psyche, I actually liked representing people who are going through family law problems. I like the challenge. I like to try and help them. I liked what I thought was the law. And at the time, it was an area of the law that not many people really thought too much about. So over a period of the next 5 years, I sort of made a name for myself in family law, and I liked it. So I gave up the criminal law, and then ultimately I gave up the tort law and the other stuff. And by the time I was doing this for 10 years, I was doing only family law. And I love it. I think it's the most challenging area of the law. It covers all these specialties, Tom, in your firm, from bankruptcy to contracts to all kinds of things that your firm does. Every one of those comes up in a lot of divorce cases. So I think your firm is uniquely able to handle the kinds of subspecialties that would be, that is to say, be involved in one of Ed's cases. I'm in a boutique firm, so I have to go outside my office to get these specialties.
Jerry, I've discovered that family law and criminal defense work are the two armpits of legal practice. We're actually looked down upon, Tom and Steve, but I have a similar experience to Jerry, and I'll simply say I handled my first case, and I said, wow, this is why when I went to law school, because I'm helping people get their lives back together. As Jerry said, it's tremendously challenging. There are about 25 different areas of law covered on our settlement checklist, so you really have to know a lot. And you get the satisfaction of having people call you saying, thank you, my life is so much better than it was. So that's why I've done it.
I would imagine,
I think the nicest letter I ever got was a letter from a client who wrote the shortest card and sent it in with a bottle of Dom Perignon that said, thank you for my new life.
Very nice. Jerry Nissenbaum joining us. Brand new book, Sex, Love, and Money. Ed Weiner in studio. Tom Schroer in studio as well. We'll talk more about the book, A Revenge and Ruin in the World of High-Stakes Divorce, on the program today. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, each and every Saturday between noon and 1 o'clock here on News Radio, 830-WCCO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth!
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Did you know that in 1955, Moss and Barnett attorney Abbott Fletcher registered a symbol first used in 1934 that was to become the most widely known logo in the entire healthcare industry, namely the Blue Cross?
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO. From the Buick Studios, this is News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome back. It is Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Barnett, available online at moss-barnett.com. Jerry Nissenbaum, our guest on the line, Ed Weiner in the studio, Tom Schroer, our host. And for this week's program, High Stakes Divorce, we have our infamous question of the week.
We do, Steve, and we'll be answering this in our final segment at the top of the next half hour. The question of the week is, what is the number one cause of divorces? And so we'll hear from these two very top-flight divorce lawyers with national reputations and answering the question, what is the number one cause of divorce?
All right, we look forward to that on the program. Jerry, Ed, during the break, we were visiting a little bit, and I had a thought. You don't have to go very far. I'm sure anybody in our audience knows someone. Maybe they've been divorced. It's a difficult, painful process. But what makes high-stakes divorce so intriguing? Why does the public seem to love to follow and get all the gory details?
Jerry, what do you think?
I don't know the answer to that, but other than to say that if you believe in a creator, or if not, serendipity. Our genes have made us interested in the problems of others, perhaps because it's happening to others and it's worse than whatever could happen to us. It makes us feel somewhat better. It's kind of hard to figure, you know, when something bad happens in my office, I come home every day and I thank God I'm so lucky to have what I do have, especially not the marital stress and so forth. So it isn't that I revel in it, but I'm certainly fascinated by it. And I think that may be the answer to your question.
I think another answer is some of us, and it's not a great attribute to have it, but I think we all have it. Sometimes we like to see the mighty fall. Sometimes we think people are arrogant. We think people are, perhaps being supported with our fees, so to speak, when we buy tickets to movies and things well beyond what they deserve. And when we have one of these people in bad situations, many people look at it and say, well, he or she deserved it. And we also feel, hey, they're kind of like me. They put on their pants one leg at a time, too, because I was divorced. Now they're getting divorced. And I think we really are interested in seeing what happens with these multi-million dollar situations.
I think also, by the way, Mel Gibson is not married to Oksana. It's his girlfriend. So they're fighting over custody. They're fighting over what might be criminal charges against Gibson for hitting her while the child was in her arms, stuff like that. The interesting point on that case is that this morning I saw crawling across the TV news that Gibson's current wife, from whom he is not yet divorced, sent a letter to the judge saying that Mel was always a gentleman to her and never raised his voice, et cetera, et cetera. I just found that fascinating that she would raise up her voice to support him in that situation. But it's a case that there'll be more audio tapes over the next week or two. And I guess the point of all that might be that Oksana is either looking for a great book deal or she's looking for what's called the Tiger Woods solution to get paid more money from Mel than she could ever make from writing a book, just as it looks like Tiger Woods' wife is going to get a $300 non-book deal.
I think that's $300 million, isn't it?
Isn't that what I said?
You said $300. That's my fee. Her fee's $300 million.
Now, is the goal in a high-stakes divorce, Ed and Jerry, to keep it out of the press as much as possible, to mitigate the media coverage and all those details getting out?
Well, from my perspective, we work very, very hard to prevent those details from getting out. There are privacy concerns. There are concerns for the safety of children with high-income people. There are concerns, of course, with people's reputations, their jobs, their careers, their, everything that goes along with that. So we work very hard. We seal files wherever we can. Courts sometimes won't let you do that. We have confidentiality agreements. Everybody involved in the case signs them. That's one of the reasons when you hear all these stories about Mel Gibson and Tiger Woods and the other celebrities that I always question whether those stories are valid, because people involved, for example, in the Tiger Woods situation, when they were allegedly modifying their antenuptial or prenuptial agreement, I said when I was interviewed on this station that I don't know that that's accurate, because the attorneys aren't going to disclose it, their staffs aren't going to disclose it, the parties aren't going to disclose it. So how does the media know what's going on? And we see all these national stories about what's happening. Who's telling them? So I always am concerned about that. But Jerry, do you try to protect clients also in these?
Absolutely. In our courts, we do have an ability to impound files and even impound the fact that the case was filed. So oftentimes with a high-profile individual, whether it's business or performance artists or whatever, we will negotiate in private. All the documents will be produced that we need. We'll draw an agreement. We'll draw the necessary divorce papers. And we will make a call over to one of the judges who's sitting in what we call a motion session that day.
Jerry, thank you for sharing on this. We'll circle back to this here after the break in a moment.
All right, and we have a break coming up. Once again, Jerry Nansenbaum joining us on the line from Boston. Ed Weiner in the studio. Tom Schroyer is our host. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. One more time, what's that question of the week? Because I'd like to get some feedback from the audience on that question as well.
Sure. The question of the week is, what is the number one cause of divorce?
All right, and you can respond. Call the program, 651-989-9226. Toll free, 1-866-989-9226. You can text our studio as well at 81807. That's 81807. Powered by Home Service Plus of CenterPoint Energy. Here on News Radio, 830 WCCO.
WCCO, now available crystal clear on 102.9 WLTE HD2, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Welcome back. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, available online at moss-barnett.com. We come your way each and every Saturday between noon and 1 o'clock. Great show today. High-stakes divorce in the spotlight. Jerry Nassenbaum joining us on the line, of course, Ed Weiner in studio, and our host is Tom Schroyer. Tom?
Thanks, Steve. Say, Jerry, I think it's a cliche, fair to say, that the rich and famous are different from the rest of us. And I'm just wondering if maybe the Tiger Woods situation isn't a good example of that, and if you might just circle back with us to talk a little bit more about what the dynamics are there in terms of how does it come to pass that a celebrity signs a premarital agreement, it has a certain dollar amount, and yet, as it turns out, they end up talking about many, many hundreds of millions of dollars more being paid. Can you shed some light on that for us?
I think that's true in not just in celebrity divorces, but lots of places where there are prenuptial agreements. Typically, they're going to be enforced if they were fair when signed. As we understand it from the press reports, Elin was supposed to get $2 million a year for each year of marriage, which means she would get $10 or $12 million. And that would be that, and that would have been considered fair because it was full disclosure. And even though he's made a lot more money in the meantime, the courts don't protect people from making stupid agreements, assuming that one might say it was stupid, which I think it wasn't. So now we have a situation where, during the course of the marriage, something has happened, and that's been in the press. Tiger Woods has lost his endorsements. What can Tiger Woods do to protect his future income, or at least rebuild it to some extent? The answer is the three S's: pay enough money to keep his wife smiling, satisfied, and silent.
I love it.
What do you think, Ed?
Well, I was going to ask you, I think, isn't one of our members of the American College of Family Trial Lawyers or the spouse of a member involved in that case, Jerry?
Don Sasser is a member of the American College of Family Trial Lawyers, but this is his son, who's 40 years old, if you believe it.
And I did want to ask you, Jerry, because I know you have a lot of experience in these major, major cases, such as the Tiger case. Do you think that the information that's leaking out is coming from the parties, their counsel, or do you think it's valid when we read in the paper or see it in the media that, you know, she's going to get $300 million or $400 million or whatever it is? You know, do they issue press releases? How do we know that's true?
Typically, the sources are the person who wants more money, not the celebrity, but the celebrity spouse. And typically, it's friends of that person who have been authorized to say certain things, or friends who just say things because they want to self-aggrandize themselves. For example, you and I talked about the fact that there's no way she was going to get $700 million because Forbes magazine the year before said he only had $600 million, and he wasn't going to give him more than he had.
That's true.
So that was a leak that was just, who knows why that came out. But I do think it's Elin's side because they're trying to put pressure on Tiger to pay more. You know, it's the old thing, Ed, right? What's the number?
And Jerry, Tom is aware that we have many, many of these cases where we're not talking about $600, $700 million. We find that in most of our prenuptial agreement cases, despite the fact that they're, as Jerry said, typically enforceable under the law, that we do have people challenging them. And many times people will throw more money at that challenge just to get the deal done and avoid the publicity.
Ed, I know we were talking offline about this. I thought you had a pretty funny story to talk or to share with our listeners about premarital that couldn't get signed up before the wedding vows.
I was brought in as a consultant. It was in a southern state. The parties were going to get married within a week or two. They brought me in too late. And I looked at the situation. I said, well, there really is not enough time to create a valid prenuptial agreement here. The husband-to-be was an NBA basketball player, and there were many millions involved. And so they asked me, well, what can we do? What can we do? Because they had 500,000 people coming to this wedding. The wedding was not being held at a church or other religious facility. So I suggested that they hire an actor for the clergy person so that the wedding they went through would not be enforceable. It would not be a valid wedding. They did that. Several weeks later, we got the prenuptial agreement done. Everybody signed it. They had a nice private ceremony. And so they had their big wedding, and then they had their legal wedding, so to speak, which allowed us to have an enforceable prenuptial agreement.
Now, I assume both spouses knew that the cleric was not performing a real ceremony.
That would have been a prerequisite, Tom, yes. They both knew, and they both agreed.
In Massachusetts, if the husband, we had a case here where a fellow from Germany who used the pseudonym Rockefeller, Clark Rockefeller, he convinced his wife to go through a private ceremony on Nantucket, and that's because he wasn't here legally, he didn't have a Social Security number, and so forth. She thought it was a valid marriage. So if you enter a marriage thinking it's valid, and you find out later it isn't, you can bring a complaint to confirm the marriage. And I didn't represent anybody in that case, but that's what had to happen in order for them to get divorced.
So, Jerry, is there another rule in your state that if you are in a marriage and you don't longer consider it a valid marriage, you can simply get out? do you have that in your state? We don't have that here. Well,
if we had that rule, you and I would be doing something far, far different, my friend.
That's true.
I don't know about where you are. I think you're pretty cosmopolitan there. Here we have lots of people from all over the world, and a lot of people come here thinking that whatever is going to apply in terms of law where they got married will apply here. So people do think that they can fly back to, and they've been living here for 3 or 4 or 10 years, they fly back to their country of origin. They go to see an imam or go to a mosque or whatever it may be, and they perform a taliq and say, I divorce thee, I divorce thee, I divorce thee. And they think they come back divorced. People come here from countries thinking that if there's a divorce, the wife won't get anything or she won't get custody or things like that. And they're shocked to find that the American system of law disregards the laws of the country where they were married. And it can create a lot of heat, to say the least.
Well, let's talk about heat in these high-stakes divorce cases where people are seeking revenge and ruin. Can you tell us, Jerry, maybe what was the worst case that you experienced in your long career where people were seeking to punish each other?
Well, it seems like it's the last case, which is always the one that's the hottest. And in my book, I talk about a case we call The Madam and the Millionaire that has all kinds of things in it. And frankly, the book could have been just about that case. For example, the guy wanted a premarital agreement because he was rich, having been a money manager, and she literally was a hooker. She had been just out of jail for being a madam, that is, a house of prostitution, and being a hooker. He met her before she went to jail. She convinced him it was a false charge. He visited her and offered to marry her. She came out. He wanted to get a premarital. She refused to sign it. He went ahead with the agreement, with the marriage anyway. Then during the course of the next couple of years, she basically sucked money out of his account, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And when she was called on it, she literally kidnapped him, because at that point he was so under her control, kidnapped him for a couple of weeks till we finally got him back. and the court appointed a temporary guardian. And then it went downhill from there. It just went downhill from there. Breaking into the houses, the cops trying to get the cars back that she had stolen, just on and on and on until it ended because the guy died. Of cirrhosis of the liver. And then post-divorce, we had another year of litigation over getting stuff back and so forth. And finally, it settled. But it just a terrible, terrible series of things, of not showing up for depositions, disobeying court orders. We've had people who have kidnapped kids in the middle of a case and taken off, and it's taken us a couple of years, if ever, to get them back.
Jerry, How can you settle cases when people are so upset with each other? How do you manage, what percentage of your cases do you settle, and how do you manage to get them settled?
I bet my percentage of settling cases is the same as yours. It's about 95% of the cases we handle get settled.
Mine's 98 to 99%, Jerry.
Oh, you do? Well, that's interesting. And the other thing that's interesting is because we're trial lawyers, and most divorce lawyers really aren't good trial lawyers. We have a self-selecting group of people who come to us because they think they may need a good trial lawyer if they can't get the case settled. And when that and so I think that's why my percentage is at 95, and I'm surprised Jaws is 98, but there you go. In my experience, people only settle when the heat, you know, usually one person's way ahead of the other. The person who wants the divorce is 6 months to a year ahead of the other one, and the other one has to catch up before they can think about settling. What about you?
Well, let me tell you a revenge story that kind of illustrates what we're talking about. I had a case where I represented the wife, and the husband, as part of that settlement we're talking about, felt that the car was too expensive for her that he had bought her previously. She was unemployed. He was the wage earner in the family. So as part of the settlement, he talked her into giving it back to the dealer, and in consideration, he provided money to buy a much, much less expensive car. And so she went ahead with that, and no more than a week after the case became final, he went out back to the dealer and bought that same car back for himself. So that's the kind of revenge things we see.
We've got more Jerry Nissenbaum joining us on the program. Ed Weiner, Tom Scheuer, our host. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, each and every Saturday between noon and 1 o'clock here on News Radio. 830-WCCO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Did you know Moss and Barnett is a member of Business Counsel, Inc.? A network of law firms based in the U.S. and abroad focused on providing high-quality legal services to the corporate business community.
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO. From the Buick Studios in downtown Minneapolis, this is 830 WCCO.
Welcome back. Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Barnett. High stakes divorce in the spotlight. Ed Weiner in studio. Jerry Nissenbaum on the phone, and our host of the program each and every week, Tom Scheuer. And back to the question of the week, Tom.
Right, Steve. Jerry Nissenbaum, from your book, the authoritative source on this, I have the question of the week to you, Jerry, which is this. What is the leading cause of divorce?
And the answer is? I didn't hear the drum roll.
Yeah.
Marriage is the leading cause of divorce.
Too cute.
But of course, the reason for the cause of marriage is love, money, and sex.
What's the
number
name of
one reason for marriage?
What's the name of your book, Jerry?
The name of the book is Sex, Love, and Money.
That's where you got it.
In the world of high stakes divorce. We're available on Amazon, by the way. He said in the shameless commerce department.
And we are, of course, tongue-in-cheek here. But seriously, Jerry, what do you see as the leading stressors that lead people to visit you and Ed?
Well, take any one of the categories that we've mentioned. A lot of people get married because they think the sex is good, and they don't understand that at some point in time they're going to have to get out of bed and look across the breakfast table and actually have a conversation. If they can't do that, then maybe they ought not to get married. If they get married, and money is always an issue, that's another reason. And love sometimes happens before the marriage or after the marriage. We see lots of people who have arranged marriages, whether it's from Orthodox Jews to people from India and China. I see that a lot. And I see most of those couples with the same backgrounds stay together. We see some that don't. I think if people don't have respect for each other and admiration for each other's intelligence and integrity, the marriage won't last.
Jerry, I see two things in my practice I've learned over the years. A good development is that people are marrying later, so they're spending time together. They're trying to determine if they really are a couple and that they should go forward and get married. That's good. What I see that's bad is there's been kind of this a focus on self-gratification, a situation where people are, when they get married, we have two unique individuals coming together with their different histories. They come together when we're first married, engaged and married. Everybody's all excited, and they overlook a lot of the warts, as you're talking about. What I've learned in my practice of four decades is that people need to be sensitive to changes in themselves and in their partners, and that if they want to stay married, they have to work very, very hard to accommodate those changes so that what brought them together in the first place, they continue to renew the relationship, renew the love, with each of them being different than where they were when they first got married. So it's a hard task. One, be sensitive to it. Two, come up with solutions to remain compatible. And three, implement those every day of the relationship so you don't backslide and grow apart. People grow apart, they get divorced.
I just expand on your last point. I tell people a good marriage, a marriage will last if every day both people get up in the morning and say, and think of every decision is, how will this impact my spouse? I should discuss this with my spouse. Always think of the marriage first. And if you do that and discuss it with your spouse, things will go a lot better.
Jerry, what I've adopted with Michelle, and I recommend this to clients, is twice a day, morning and night, we renew our vows, so to speak, by actually talking to each other, listening, caring, reestablishing the relationship that brought us together in the first place.
I think that's great. I mean, every night I come home, my wife is also my law partner, Tom, so I have a unique situation. So I can come home and talk with her about what's going on in the office, and she can make comments about her cases. And we probably spend an hour or an hour and a half every evening just chatting. No TV is on during our dinners. No TV is on, during the conversations. And it's a high-quality, loving, respectful relationship. So if you can get that in a marriage, you're going to have a really good marriage.
Well, Jerry, we're very tight on time. We're just about out of time. Thanks so much. Best of luck with the book, Sex, Love, and Money, Revenge, and Ruin in the World of High-Stakes Divorce.
Thanks for having me on. I truly appreciate it. Take care, my friend, Ed.
Thank you, Jerry.
All right, there he is, Jerry Nissenbaum. And thanks again, Ed Weiner. Always great to see you and Tom next week on the program.
Yes, Steve, we're going to have David Beek, patent lawyer with Moss & Barnett, back again to talk about patent law, this time to talk about the effect of labeling a product as being patented when, in fact, it's not, the amazing consequences that follow from that.
All right, great show today. The hour went by very quickly. We appreciate you listening to the program. Thanks again, Jerry Nissenbaum, Ed Weiner, and Tom Schroyer for joining us. Here on News Radio 830 WCCO, it is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss & Barnett, each and every week between noon and 1 o'clock.